More and more, badass women are joining the ranks as highly skilled construction professionals. Construction and renovation projects wouldn't happen without the skills of the various crews involved. As we all know, the skilled trades have been male-dominated for like forever. In this season, I'm highlighting the amazing women doing their thing in the construction sector. Every journey and every story is different, but they are all inspiring. Have a listen as I learn about their stories. Hello, one and all. Today I have Christine Byers on the show. She's a Red Seal carpenter and union business representative for the Carpenters Regional Council of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Joiners of America, and that's quite the mouthful. She is passionate about diversifying the workforce through inclusion and advancement of women, Indigenous workers, and other underrepresented groups in the trades. She is involved or has been involved with a number of organizations, BCC WIT, BC Tradeswomen, Build Together BC, and the BCRCC's Sisters in Brotherhood Committee for the BC and the Yukon. Christine has worked in a variety of areas within carpentry and has made herself a very well-rounded professional in carpenter. And in the field, she's held the position of foreperson and supervisor on several jobs. In her spare time, she enjoys giving back to her community, has been a frequent volunteer for such organizations as Habitat for Humanity and Hero Works, Radical Renovations, and she also enjoys being active, doing arts and crafts, and traveling with her husband and daughter. So Christine, thanks for joining me on the show today. I'm really looking forward to hearing what you have to say.
Thanks for having me, Brandy.
All right, so I always like to start at the beginning. How did you arrive at carpentry? What motivated you to leave some engineering studies in military college to pursue carpentry? I know that was part of your background. So maybe just take us back to the genesis of where you started from.
So I'd never actually thought about trades as a career, especially in my family. My mom was a teacher. She was an elementary school teacher librarian. So education was very much pushed in our family. There's nobody in my family who's in the trades. All my family members are either in blue collar jobs or my dad was an accountant. So it was never really, I never thought about it as a career. I loved being hands-on. I loved being doing arts and crafts. But I was always pushed to pursue academics. And I think when I started thinking about what to do with academics, civil engineering kind of just really popped into my head. So had in my head, like, I'm going to be this amazing builder. I'm going to do all this stuff. I actually ended up going to the Royal Military College because I wasn't entirely sure what I wanted to do. So I was like, hey, well, the military will tell me what to do. It kind of turned out that I didn't exactly love the way the military told me how to do things. And that was actually what gave me the opportunity to change. So when I first went there, and this is a lot of politics involved with military, is they try to fill a position 5 years or 4 years down the road when you finish school and don't give you a lot of options for changing. So I was told, yeah, it's easy to change trades. Just sign up so you don't miss your first year. I did my general first year in engineering because it's general whether you do mechanical, electrical. But the trade that they had assigned me to required me to take a mechanical or electrical. So I'd been signed up as a naval combat system engineer and had tried to get a trade change my entire first year. And then at the end of the year, they basically said, well, you didn't get your trade change. So at this point, you have to either go and sign up for mechanical or electrical engineering. Or my counselor jokingly said, or fail out of your program. So I didn't really think that mechanical or electrical, like I honestly felt that I was probably going to fail if I went into those. I had no interest in them. I was really dead set on being, a civil engineer and building bridges, going into communities and assisting them, especially with disaster relief. That was part of the reason why the military really stuck out for me. And so I did. I filled out of just enough programs. I filled out of two courses, which forced them to give me a trade change. I decided I didn't want to just be a plain art student, nothing against art students. So I went into economics, which I had zero interest in, and after taking it was even more like, what am I doing? So it kind of started like spinning my wheels as to, well, what do I really want to do? Like, why did I get in? Why did I come here? Why was civil engineering something that interests me? And it came to mind that I said, well, I like being hands-on, and I realized I really wanted to get my hands dirty I wanted to get in there. I wanted to build the things myself. And being a civil engineer, especially actually in the military, any of the engineers that I know in the military, they're officers. They don't actually use their degrees whatsoever. So it's actually kind of funny that they really push that you have to get a degree specific to your trade. And I'm kind of glad I didn't pursue that. And then while I was still at the college, at the Royal Military College, I applied back home to Okanagan College, and applied for their carpentry and cabinetry program. It was a 6-month program. Because when I told my parents that I'm dropping out of a full ride university, full paid, to go into the trades, yeah, my mom was not too thrilled. They're like, but we just spent your education fund on buying our RV for retirement because you weren't going to need it. Anyway, I did drop out, and all she really said to me is, but you're going to school for that, right? So I did. I signed up for the 6-month program. I actually briefly thought about doing welding. But then I thought back to when I was in grade 7, 8, when I was about 12 years old. We did a circuit of community where we did like a little bit of everything. We did like home ec and sewing and all that stuff. I came out of the carpentry program, and that was the first time I ever asked for a tool. And I just had my dad deliver that tool when I saw them last week. And it was a scroll saw, because all I wanted for my 12th birthday that year was a scroll saw. And really that sort of cemented, like, I love the smell of wood. I mean, I like the smell of burning metal too. That's a whole different thing, but I didn't want to get that dirty. Like, when you talk to welders, and I started researching it a little bit more, there's just a lot of like toxicity and everything they deal with. I still have a passion for it and still want to learn to weld, but ultimately it was like, I love the smell of sawdust. And so yeah, I dropped out of university and went home and took this 6-month program while I was going to school for it, because I needed an income. I actually worked in a cabinet shop in the evenings. I worked part-time with the night shift in the spray booths of a cabinet shop. I was determined I was going to be a cabinet maker. I loved, manipulating wood. I thought building furniture was going to be the coolest thing ever, and the program I was doing was leading to that. So we actually finished with both our carpentry and our first year of joinery, cabinet making. And but while working at that cabinet shop, I realized there's no money in cabinet making. When I first started there, the minimum wage had just gone up, and people who had been working there for like 2, 3 years got a pay increase to come up to minimum wage. And so they were angry that I was coming in getting paid as much as they were. And I realized the top tier people doing all the custom work were maybe making $26 to $28 an hour. So after I finished my schooling, I only worked there for a little bit later, because we did night shift. I worked through the nights there. It wasn't the greatest. And ended up going to work as a carpenter. Tell me when to stop at any point, because
No, that's
I'll just keep going. Because
fine.
getting into the trades, like after school, I didn't know anything about how you went and got a job. Like, I just started applying for jobs, but honestly, nobody would even give me the time of day, or even like take a second glance at my resume. And I ended up, yeah,
So,
go ahead.
how did you end up getting a job then?
So I did end up trying a lot of different resumes, threw out a lot of resumes, dropped into a lot of different job sites. But ultimately, I ended up calling up one of my old cadet officers. So I used to be an air cadets. And one of my old officers of one of my ex-boyfriends I knew was a carpenter. So I called him up and I said, hey, can I apprentice under you? And he just goes, well, it doesn't exactly work like that. But here's a phone number of a woman. Go talk to her, and she'll help you out. So it turns out that he was the president of the local union there with the United Brotherhood of Carpenters, Local 1370. And he sent me to go talk to their business rep, Gina O'Rourke. And Gina was an amazing woman. Her and her husband gave so much to our union. At the time, they were actually running the local out of their house. There wasn't a lot of union work there, but she got me all signed up with the union. He got me really involved with the union, but she helped me apply for jobs in different in the city. And funny enough, I actually ended up applying for the job on his job site, and he was the foreman at the time. The superintendent was a young guy, and he said he put his resume in front of my old colleague Jeff, and Jeff says, "Yeah, I pretended not to know you," and said, because the guy said, "Well, what do you think about her?" And he says, "I think you should give her a shot." And he says, "You pretended not to know me," and so they hired me, and I actually ended up working under him for a couple of weeks before he left, and that was my first job in the field.
Right. So from there, I mean, I know from a little bit of your broader bio that you worked through getting your apprenticeship, and then you worked in a variety of different fields and all that kind of stuff. So maybe just take us quickly through sort of you started there and then you jumped to a variety of other things, from concrete formwork to mining, commercial stuff, like, and then even into the film industry. So maybe just take us quickly through sort of how you went from one sort of area or sector to another.
Sure. So I worked a little bit. That was in Kelowna when I used to live there. Worked in the commercial residential sector, doing townhomes. Worked for a lot of the general contractors. So I did a lot of deficiencies work, which means that you pretty much do everything but nothing, but not a lot of anything specific. It's everything from.
Yeah, I mean, for those who are listening, basically it's the job is almost complete or complete, and there's a whole bunch of little small things that all either need to be completed or something got damaged and it needs to be replaced and you need to touch things up and all that kind of thing. And it's a very detailed job. You need to have a good eye and you need to be able to like not destroy everything while you're trying to fix everything. So it's one of those types of jobs.
Exactly. So you go in there after all the trades pretty much are done, usually, or you're going behind other trades and fixing their problems. And actually, we had a terrible on my first job, we had a terrible framing company that didn't want to do a lot of the things. So I was doing a lot of that framing for them. So I did that for a while. Worked for that company for a couple of years, I think, and then kind of bounced around a little bit. Did some other commercial. Did a lot of commercial work, actually, a lot of townhouse development. So everything from like basic concrete formwork to basic framing. And then and some of it was union work and some of it was non-union work. And then there was a really big project up in Mount Milligan, which was a copper gold mine that they built a few years back. That was one of my very first really large industrial jobs. Just prior to that, I was actually again working for a general contractor on the Kelowna Hospital, doing deficiencies in back framing, which I mean I joke, but I loved it, but I also hated it. It's a very solo job. You do a lot of different things, but you never actually get to work with a lot of people. So when I had the opportunity to take the job up in Mount Milligan, which is between Fort St. James and Mackenzie in northern BC, I kind of jumped at it because I said, you know, I need to actually work with some people. I kind of miss being somewhat social. And at that point, I was a fourth year apprentice and really hadn't had a lot of opportunity to work with a lot of journey people.
Yeah, well, we need to learn more than just deficiencies in back framing, but there's a lot to it to be a
Exactly. Yeah.
well-rounded sort of
But I mean that also ties into being a woman in the trades and having people not be quite sure about how they're supposed to be around you, how they're supposed to work around you. And that goes for like everyone from superintendents to, you know, tradespeople out on the job who you know, they want to help you, but some of them are afraid to help you. It's a whole dynamic. Anyway, took that job, went up and started doing industrial concrete formwork, which I kind of fell in love with, to be honest. Never thought that that's where I would enjoy it, because I went from doing very detail-oriented things to, you know, swinging giant sledgehammers and hanging off of formwork. But I at the time I used to rock climb as well. So if anyone had told me when I got into the trades that I would get paid to climb all over things and hang out of belly chains off of walls, I probably would have started a lot sooner, and I probably would have done that field a lot sooner.
Right.
And On that job site, we were a couple hundred feet up in the air. We were building what's called a primary crusher, which is where they offload anything that they're crushing in for the mine into the very top of it, and it goes down a whole series of different crushing machines and comes out the bottom a couple hundred feet below it. So we were building that entire tower that then goes on the conveyor belt, and then it gets sorted further on.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So,
And
yeah, go ahead.
no, go ahead.
No, I was gonna say, so from that kind of work, also I just, this thing that building spaceships in the film industry. So how did that come, like you're doing all this like crazy form work and all whatever, and then there's this like outlier of spaceships in the film industry. I thought that was really
Yeah, so I never stopped having that passion for doing like the fine finishing work and doing like the creative side. Like I kind of briefly said, like I've always loved doing arts and crafts, and I really have. And I worked in a bunch of different fields in a lot of it was commercial concrete. There's just a lot of work, especially with the unions. A lot of it for carpenters is industrial concrete formwork.
yeah.
So I followed that around for a few years. And then I was actually working in the Lower Mainland, which is really big for the film industry. And at the time, I was kind of getting tired with what I was doing. And I had a couple buddies who were in the film industry and said, "Hey, like there's never been a better time to come and just try this out. Like they're starving for people. Just put in your application and see." And sure enough, like I got called out like almost immediately because there aren't a lot of Red Seal carpenters that apply. Ironically, nobody actually checks what your stats are once you get sent out to a job, but I can get into that after because that was funny. But yeah, I ended up getting called out to this job site, left my other job, went out and started my first job site. Was the only woman
That is
on this job site.
such a common
Oh yeah, always.
sort of narrative. I was the only woman, or I was like the first one, or there's only two of us, or like
Yeah.
it's
I mean,
like
I didn't mention about any of the other jobs because I almost like forget because I was the only one on 99% of my jobs. But the reason it really stood out to me my first day in film is they first sent me to a warehouse where they were building sets inside. And then they kind of put me off to my on my own, working by myself. And I was like, oh, okay. And then all of a sudden I get a call and they're like, oh yeah, we're sending you like out in the field. They need some more people out there. I was like, oh, okay. So they're like, pack up your stuff and leave. And then I get out there and I end up getting to be really good friends with my foreman who's out there. And he goes, "Do you know how you got out here?" And I was like, "No, I just got told to come out." He goes, "Yeah, I got a phone call that says we got a woman. Do you want her?" And I was like, "Well, what do you mean?" Because I was the only Red Seal person on that job site. And I was one of 100. And my first day on that job, I became really good friends with the safety guy, but on the very first day on my job, they had a safety meeting and he stood up as he's giving his speech. He goes, "Oh, guys, by the way, we have a woman on site now. So, mind your P's and Q's." This is my first day. And I just like stood up and I'm like, like, what do you mean? Like, I did safety for a really long time too. But I kind of like now I look back and I'm like, why? And it's not like I hadn't
Why
been.
is that really required? Why is that neat? Like, we really.
Yeah. And I'd been a journey person and had my Red Seal at that point for a couple of years. Like I was like probably 12, 13 years into the trade. So I'm just like, okay. So I actually just stood up and I'm like, oh, where? Like, hi. Like, that's me. But yeah. And then to hear it from my foreman later on that, nobody ever actually asked what my qualifications were. And it was like a re recurring theme when I was in film because there aren't actually a lot of ticketed people in the film industry. There's a lot of very creative and very interesting people in the film industry, but not a lot of certified people. And I was building some stairs at one point because my partner who was supposed to build them with wasn't there, and our coordinator, who was equivalent to like a superintendent in the construction industry, but in film they call them coordinators. He randomly walked by me one day and I'm building this set of stairs and he looks at me and goes, "You know how to build stairs?" I was like, "Yeah, I'm a Red Seal carpenter. Of course I know how to build stairs." And he goes, "Oh, well, we need more of you, more qualified people." And he was like really trying to be politically correct as he spoke to me. But it was because they saw that I was capable that they, made a point of getting me my days and working hard to make sure that I got into the film union, into IATSE.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah.
All right, so out of all these different things that you've done up to that point, was there, it sounds like the forming and hanging off of like things that were really high was kind of like the, I don't know, the highlight or the most enjoyable part. Is that fair to say, or is it just the whole thing was just great?
You know what? Like I've loved different aspects of my job for a lot of different reasons. I really love working in the film industry. And like you brought up the spaceships. Honestly, that was the it took me like 12, 13 years to get back into doing what I felt like I originally got into the into carpentry for,
Yeah.
was being creative. And that's really what film allowed me to do. It allowed me to, you know, take a napkin drawing, which you quite often get from your director, and build it. They don't care how the insides or the guts look. They just want to know what the outside, like, here's what I want, figure it out.
Yeah.
This is where I want the lighting. This is where I want the access. Like, it to me, I really love the film industry, and just the creative aspect of it. I didn't get that in working with concrete. It's not very forgiving. It's very strict in how you have to do it. But yeah, no, I really loved working in film.
Yeah. Okay. And now you've sort of transitioned and you're in a completely different role. So maybe tell us a little bit about sort of how that came to be.
So I was actually working in the film industry, but I've always been very involved with the Carpenters Union. I was part of our sisters committee there, the Sisters in the Brotherhood, and ever since Jeff got me involved in the union, I was always involved with my executive committee. And even when I worked in film, I was still very involved with them. And that's really been where my heart has always been, like in advocating for women getting into the trades and advocating for like diversity, inclusion, and representation. And they'd never actually had a female representative that had come off the tools. Any female representative they'd had previously had been come from an administrative role. And I think because of my involvement in the community and everything that I did with the Carpenters Union, they kind of reached out and asked me to interview for a position as a representative. And I thought about it for a while, but it really fit where I wanted to go because as much as I love the film industry, it's very demanding and you don't really have a life because when you work in it, you're working 60, 70, 80 hour work weeks and you live your job.
Yeah.
And so when they said, you know, this job would be closer to 40 hours a week, which it never has been, but I thought it was a great opportunity. And also because I'd never seen any women, it was a space that I know that needed to be filled. And I knew I wanted to be in that.
Yeah, so in talking about the like the advocacy work and all that kind of thing and bringing in I guess attraction and retention of women and other people who are underrepresented. What are some of the key pieces that you see that either are already happening or that need to, be beefed up or broader? Like, what are even some like new ideas that you might have to like bring that to be something that's a little bit more impactful?
So the biggest change that needs to happen, and it's coming slowly, is the culture change on the job sites. Like notoriously construction sites, like I don't know very many companies that have HR departments, and if they do, it's not really for the benefit of the workers. It's changing that culture on the job site. It's, you know, allowing people to work in a respectful environment, to be treated fairly, to, you know, have in some cases, just basic human rights, which construction's just been so archaic. And that's slowly coming. And that's coming through, you know, programs that like BCC with the BC Center for Women in the Trades puts on, like the Be More Than a Bystander program, and just shifting that culture. But that takes a lot of time. And we are getting there. One of the other things is just having accommodations. Construction's always been, you know, these are the hours we work. They're very inflexible. And I know, you know, from my experience that those contractors who are willing to be flexible for their workers, gain so much loyalty from them.
Yep.
You know, whether it's a woman or a man or you know, non-binary, if you need accommodations, you shouldn't be able to not ask. Even if it's as simple as, you know, needing to start a half hour later because your childcare provider doesn't open early enough. That's a huge one. And I mean, it quite often gets brought up by women, but it's really not a women's issue.
It's a
It's
parent
an
issue.
industry issue. Yeah, it's a parent issue. Exactly. It's a parent issue. But men don't get asked that when they go for interviews. Men don't get asked, you know, are you planning on having kids? Do you have kids? Are you responsible for your kids? All illegal questions to ask in an interview, but still they get asked, right? And I mean, I've had interviews where I mean, I walk out shaking my head, going like, that like I should file a human rights complaint against you. But that was early on in my career, and I feel like I'm a very different person and would approach them very differently now. But I
Well,
also wouldn't be as firm.
we'll learn as we go, and what we put up with as a young apprentice, early days, you know, first, second year, we put up with all kinds of stuff because
Oh,
you do. And then
yeah.
as you go through, and now you've got your ticket, and like, you know, whatever, you have a little bit more to stand behind you, and you know, you yourself have grown as a person, and you know what your skill level is, you know what you bring, and we all learn to, you know, communicate a little differently. And you know, basically call people out on their shit in a constructive and respectful way, a good deal of the time, and if needed, maybe not as constructive and respectful if it is warranted, right? Like sometimes you just really have to advocate hard for your own self and not put up with just really shitty behavior from people. And that's a boundary. And you know, if it's especially when it comes to health and safety and human rights and all that kind of stuff, like, you know, it's not back in the day where, you know, people could get away with that kind of stuff. It's
Well,
really
no,
not.
and like you shouldn't have to have a thick skin just to work in the trades. Like, we all go to work. Like, people shouldn't miss out on a great opportunity because of the, you know, toxicity of the workplace. That's just not fair. Like, there's so many people that I know would make amazing carpenters or tradespeople who have been in the trades and have left usually for, you know, toxicity, from one way or another. And it's not because they're not capable of doing the work. And I mean, it's not fair when you're thinking about 50% or more of the population who's being, you know, sidelined from these job opportunities simply because of their gender, because people don't think they're capable.
Also, we're so desperate for skilled trades people. Like, we have this whole sector of people, 50, like 50 plus percent of the population that could easily fill all these roles and basically make life a lot easier for everybody. If only, you know, the tide will change. And I mean, the needle has been moving, and it's been moving quite slowly. And I just can hardly wait for the day where we reach that tipping point where this becomes like a non-issue, a non-conversation. We don't even need to talk about it. We talk about it from a historical perspective as opposed to what's happening still now in this day and age. I mean, I've been in this world for 20, almost 30, no, 30, yeah, like 30 years. And I'm still hearing the same and coming up against the same. I mean, I've been self-employed for many, many years, so it's not quite as big a deal. But you know, I still hear it all the time. It's bonkers to me. Like, this needs to.
But I'm sure you still have that apprehension, like when you walk on the job site and people go, "Oh yeah, but where's the actual carpenter?" Or like, "Where's the actual tradesperson who's going to do the work?"
Yeah, or they ask me, are you the designer or whatever? Which is like, being a designer is nothing wrong with that. But I'm like, no, I'm the GC. Oh, like it's kind of, they get taken aback, right? And it's just, it's one of those things where it's like, yeah. And then, okay, so now ask me my questions, or you know, let's clarify, let's get us on the same page. Yes, I'm qualified. Yes, I've been in this industry for a long time. Yes, I know what I'm talking about. Okay,
And
let's
again, but a
move on.
man wouldn't walk onto that job site and be questioned the same way.
Never.
And it's the same thing that I have, even being as a representative when I'm interviewing potential new members and trying to figure out what their qualifications are. I can have a colleague who knows absolutely nothing about carpentry, but is a guy, and have an individual, always a guy, come in and try and convince him why he should, you know, join, whereas he's sitting in front of me bullshitting. And I'm calling him on his shit because I'm like, look, like, I shouldn't have to hang my red seal on the wall to justify that I know what I'm talking about. But yeah, no, it took a really long time. And, you know, I know that disproportionately I have members treat me differently than my colleagues. And I think I was optimistic in thinking that, okay, if I step into this role, it's going to change. But now I'm stepping, you know, out of an industry where we may have made up 5% into an industry where maybe we make up one.
Yep.
So even like my colleagues, they're great to deal with, but I'm also new to them. They've never had it, you know, to deal with a female representative, and a lot of my contractors, same thing. They don't know how to deal with a female representative. They're used to, you know, always dealing with a guy, and it's good and bad,
Yeah.
right?
I told you that the easiest thing is if you wouldn't do it to a guy, don't do it to me. If you would do it to a guy, do it to me. Like, just who
Yeah, it's
cares
simple.
what gender? Like, I'll put a mask on, pretend like this doesn't matter. Like, just be a human talking to me as a human, interacting with me as a human, regardless of my gender or how I identify. Just be a human.
Well, and that's actually part of why I believe in like screening resumes, because we all have unconscious bias, right? And I mean, unfortunately, there are certain telltales when you're actually reading a resume that it doesn't matter if you knew the name of the person on it or not, you're going to read it in a certain fashion based on how it's written. But when I was applying for jobs, I didn't get callbacks until I changed my name to Chris on my resume. And half the time when I walked in for my interview, they thought I was like there for an HR role or something, or something else. And quite often, you know, even contractors where I'd applied, knowing full well they would not ever hire a woman because I've been blatantly told that. But me being the stubborn person goes, yeah, you say that, but they haven't met me. And to walk in to be told before I even get into the chair for my interview, all of the reasons why they will never hire a woman, you know.
What were some, just out of curiosity, what were some of them that were listed or noted?
I had an op-ed piece actually that we wrote about it, but one of the first interviews I had with this contractor, and his HR person was great. She walked me in, thought it was odd that he was seeing a woman, and didn't even make it to the desk. And he told me, "You're only a distraction on the job site. You're going to show up in Lululemons on the job site, and you're only here to find a husband. You know, you don't actually know how to do the work. You're not physically capable of doing the work." It wasn't an interview. I was just a punching bag. Yeah.
That's
And
terrible.
I was told before I even went there, you know, this guy will never hire a woman. So, and he was right. He didn't.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, I worked in a few different shops, and two of them I was the first and only woman ever. And the another one, there was two or three of us that had been sort of hired. And yeah, I the ones where I was the only and first. In those cases, I think it was out of curiosity to see what could she do. Let's give her a go. Like, not really expecting anything, just like, oh, well, it's whatever, you know. She did her stint at BCIT, and here she, you know, whatever. Let's just give her a go and see. I mean, what's the worst that'll happen? That's kind of a bit of the feeling that I got, especially the first one. And then the second one, I'd actually gone and interviewed that company and that GM prior to going into the trades to ask the question that if I had taken this, well, back then it was called ELTT, Entry Level Trades Training, and now it's the Foundations program. But if I had taken this program, would it give me a leg up? Would they consider hiring me? And, you know, to his, my former boss's, my now former boss's credit, he was very kind. He answered my questions. I'm sure he was just scratching his head, thinking, who was this person that just walked in my office? Because I used to ride a motorbike, I had my helmet, the whole thing. And, you know, to his credit, he definitely like put aside some of the, maybe some bias or whatever. And then when I turned back around and I had almost forgotten I talked to him. And when I reached out to see if they were hiring, he's like, I remember you. And I'm curious to see how you've done. So come on by. But you know, it was So I had a couple of really good experiences, and then I had a couple that weren't so great too. So,
Well, but at the same time, like I always say, you know somebody's opinion of if they've ever worked with a woman. They will always tell you, positive or negative. I mean, I joke that it's like you can tell by the intonation of their voice. I worked with a woman once, or I worked with a woman once. Like it's a, they will always tell you though, and they will make a point of telling you. It will usually be the first thing they tell you. On any job I've ever been on, that's always been the case, and that's also not fair. Because why does one experience that somebody has had with an entire gender determine how they're going to work with the next person?
Yeah, it's like, oh,
And
I went to an Italian restaurant and I had a terrible meal, so I'm never having Italian ever again. Or I
exactly, not
went
I
to this
maybe don't
Italian
go back
restaurant
there.
and I will never go to a different restaurant ever again. Like, it's crazy, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, we think it's crazy that they don't, and half of them don't even think like that. That's a bias.
Yeah. Which
Like,
is like
okay.
this program that's come out, don't be a bystander.
Be more in a bystander.
Be more than a bystander. Yeah, thank you. I would love to see that just blanket across, like even right from like junior high all the way through. And it, 'cause it can be applied to every sector, like everybody. I just think it's a really great program and I like love to see it just blanket across.
So our union actually agrees with that. We've started adopting it as part of we have an apprenticeship services program grant. That goes for paying new apprentices into the trade. So it pays contractors for bringing on new first year apprentices, and it pays them an increased amount if it's an equity seeking group.
Yeah.
But with that program, as if they partner with us on that program, part of it, they have to put somebody in their company through the Be More in a Bystander program. And now we've also included the Justice, Equity, Diversity, Inclusion training, which is the JEDI training that BCC WIT also offers. And we've partnered with them to offer both these trainings for any contractor that works with us, because we agree it's helping to change the culture. And we know that when we look at retention and recruitment, people don't stay where they don't feel valued and or safe. I mean, it can be as simple as not feeling safe on a job site. And the Be More in a Bystander program really goes into that, like creating that safe space.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. All right, so now we've kind of like woven our way through where were you initially and where have you landed now? We've kind of gotten into a little bit of like the, how do we advocate and what changes need to be made? Do you have any other little bits of wisdom or sage advice for any other women or any other equity seeking group that would be considering getting into the trades? Is there just a couple of maybe little nuggets that you'd say, yes, consider this or consider that?
Well, just try it. And I really advocate, especially for youth who are considering it, don't not finish your school, but come try it in the summer. I quite often companies take on construction workers throughout the summer season. We actually have a program in Victoria called I'm going to forget. I will come back to what it's called. Plan A. We call it the Plan A program because trade shouldn't be a plan B. They should be a plan A. So it's a program in collaboration with high school students where they get to come out and work for a contractor during the summer. If they get given like all the tools they need to come and be a carpenter, and then if they decide to stick with it the following year, so they can do it in say like grade 10, 11, 12 in the summers, all of it's in accreditation with the apprenticeship program. So they are signed up through the youth apprenticeship program and they get credit for all the hours that they work. So
Oh,
they can
beautiful.
actually come out. Yeah. So they can actually come out of like graduating. We still tell them, go back to school, like finish your schooling. And that's where it's not a plan B. Like trades, changing the culture and the mindset and changing parents' mindsets. I mean, I'm still trying to change my own parents' mindset. I mean, around trades, and that's sometimes really hard to say, because if people don't think it's a valuable option, they won't allow people to do it, and they won't allow their kids to do it. But it doesn't mean that it can't pay for you to continuously do other programs. Like I know so many people who have pursued degrees and diplomas, but they've used trades to pay for it. So even if you do it as a summer job, it pays a hell of a lot better than, working for minimum wage anywhere, and you're developing a skill.
Oh,
and their
100%.
life skills.
100%.
And it doesn't matter which trade you choose. You could go do plumbing for one summer. You could go, try carpentry. All the skills are relatable. You learn how to cut, measure, and calculate things in any one of those trades. So even if you just start off in one, and maybe that's not for you, it'll get you in the door and it'll help you to kind of expand your mindset. Maybe you want to be a project manager. Maybe you want to manage jobs in the future. I think there's nothing better than having a foundation in working on the job. And it teaches great ethics.
Absolutely. I mean, there's such empowerment to being able to use tools, not be afraid of them. Know, like you say, know how to measure, know how to, like, just even just basic stuff that even if you don't do it for your job, but if say you want to hang a picture or you want to like cut a piece of wood to do, like, it's just those basic life skills, I think. It's like swimming, learning to drive, and like looking both ways before crossing the street. It's just these are just basic things that I think everyone should know how to do. And it is very empowering for people, especially women, to be able to do their own stuff and not have to rely on a guy to come and do whatever, connect some whatever, connect your new faucet in your kitchen sink or whatever it happens to be, right? Just to be able to have a little bit of empowerment and agency to do some of these things without having to rely on somebody else, I think it's just amazing, whether male, female, whichever.
But
So,
sorry,
what?
the other thing I was going to say is also just knowing that there are supports out there, because quite often people are leery about changing their career, especially when they're established somewhere. But know that there's supports in place to help you with, the financial burden of taking it on. And we have specific programs also for like helping. Right now we have specific programs for women to help them, pay for tuition, because quite often you can't afford to go off to take the time off for school, and then but you can't afford not to go because then you're not increasing and then your wage isn't going up. So it's this vicious loop. So we want to make sure that we're encouraging people to not just start their careers, but to give them the supports to finish them. And that's one of the things that's different about, being part of a union is we're not just offering you a job, we're offering you a career and opportunity for growth. Because we know that it's not just about learning the hard skills of your trade, which you need to do, but we also believe in training the leadership and the soft skills that go along with it to make you a well-rounded tradesperson.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so we're gonna just round it out here. I always like to ask a couple of fun questions at the end. So what's your favorite tool and why?
It's funny, only because I worked in the film industry, I really like an oscillating tool, which is a multi, they sometimes call it a multi-tool. It sounds, you know what I'm talking about. It's the most annoying tool you will ever use in a job site, and everybody hates when you use it. We
It's
had
got a
a,
really high-pitched, whiny, like, eh.
but it's so universal, and yeah, it can do everything from like sanding fine little projects to cutting all of your trim. And I think it just really it really made things just easier and faster, especially when they became portable
Yeah.
and
Oh, yeah.
cordless.
And battery operated on top of that,
And
right?
battery operated. And I mean, I never would have even thought, but going back now, I'm like, oh, I wish I had one of those in the field doing concrete work. It would have made a lot of things easier.
All right. Well, Christine, again, thank you so much for joining me on the show. I really enjoyed hearing about your journey, and I really wish you nothing but success in your new position. And I really look forward to seeing how all these different sort of topics and changes and things that we're trying to implement, you and many other women that I've had on the show, to see if we can get that needle to move a little faster, a little better. And I think we're all on the same path. We're all looking towards the same goal. And I think we know what success looks like. We want to just make everything very inclusive, very safe, and just have like this army of, well, really highly skilled tradespeople. You basically have a plan A. This is plan A. Let's get all of these really highly skilled tradespeople in the field and doing what they need to do. And then we're also going to then drive all our economic stuff and blah, 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 blah. Like, I think there's this like huge trickle down effect that people don't always recognize, that we really do drive the economy. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what you do. Be sure to circle back and let us know how you're doing. And for those listening, You know, I really appreciate the fact that you take the time to listen. And we're always looking for more women to interview on the show. So please do connect if you or anyone else you know might be a good fit. Happy to have a quick conversation with them, make sure that everybody's comfortable. And be sure to check out our other episodes in this and all the other All Things Renovation series. And until next time, keep being badass at whatever trade that you're in.
Thanks for listening, and I hope you feel as inspired as I do. If you or someone you know has interest in the trades, there are many resources, many programs and supports. There's also a ton of women's groups out there specifically for those who are in the trades. We'll list a number of them in the show notes, but be sure to reach out if you're having challenges finding some in your area. We're all in this together, after all, and we're happy to help in any way we can.